Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Basket of Deplorable show, our salute to being grown up about things.
Since when have we ever been that?
And bringing diverse groups of people together as a leader should do. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. We have a guest today, and this is one of those situations where one of my colleagues became so disturbed by the direction the show went that she asked if she could be on at least to correct the record at some point. And so we graciously allowed her on the show. From the University of Kentucky, assistant professor in the UK Physician Assistant Studies Program, and a PA, practicing physician assistant at St. Clair Regional, Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
And also with us, as usual, due to a failure of security, from the University of Kentucky, Manager of Communications Infrastructure, to explain to you about our web presence, my good friend and frequent sparring partner, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's right. Moorhead State Public Radio does have a website. You can go there. You can look at some other shows if you really have to. But we would prefer that you find Health Matters in that menu structure. And, you know, they do such a good job of updating the website that sometimes I just don't know. I can't tell you exactly where that is. But you know what? If you can't traverse a web page, you're going to have a bigger problem than I can even begin to solve. So find that on the website. Jump over to the Health Matters page. There you will find a list of the most recent shows. There's a summary there in case you want to find something. The odds are that that summary is not going to tell you enough to know. So you're just going to have to click on the little link there and listen to the show. That's right. It's the audio. You can listen to it, download it, put it on your podcast, put it in your car. There's all kinds of things you can do with it. Again, it's at WMKY.org. After that, you've become so appalled that you just have to say something, right? You've listened to enough. Yeah. You just can't take any more. How do you vent your frustration? You do that on Facebook.com/HM Radio Show. That's right. That is where you interact with Health Matters. It's a fan page. Tony posts things there. I post things occasionally. We like to get things that are in the news or relevant at the time or possibly show topics. We certainly interact with you, our wonderful listeners. Give us show topics. Tell us what you think of the show. Tell us what you thought of one of our performances, preferably Tony, because, you know, I don't take things well like that. But it's amazing how we just become interactive. Isn't that right, Tony?
We're like electronic family.
Exactly.
Yeah, in a sense.
We're like an e-fam. An e-fam. Right?
You're in rare form. I got to say, this is a vocabulary building show.
No, Tony. My wife says I'm just rare. She just says it's rare.
No, this is great. I love it.
So, anyway, Facebook.com is where you go to interact with us. And, again, we have a couple of longtime listeners, longtime Facebookers. They can attest to the fact that we will actually, you have a 90% chance, or maybe even higher than that, of us interacting or responding to something that you put out there. Got a reasonable question, got some information, that's how you get us engaged. And again, that's at Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
And a special shout out to Bruce of the North, who likes just about everything we put. Thank you, Bruce.
Well, I have to give a shout out to Larry. Larry the engineer, right?
Rick and Larry have become fast friends now.
Well, I mean, we're in that get to know each other phase, but, you know, hey. He is an intriguing individual. As a technology guy, I look forward to just picking his brain.
We are, in fact, all sons of Larry, in a sense. Our sponsor for today's show, the Vaccination League. That's right, Vaccination League.
It's that time again.
It is that time again for our fall flu vaccination. The Vaccination League, reminding you, vaccination is like Mother Nature with a 23-gauge needle. That's right. Avoid all those harsh chemical vitamins and antibiotics. and get vaccinated. Let your body's own immune system take over and protect you from all those nasty viruses and bacteria that are out there in the world.
When did we upgrade from a 22-gauge needle to a 23-gauge needle? Actually, well, and technically we got smaller, right?
Right, yeah, it is smaller. The recommendations, which I just checked today, I do not keep this in my memory, say 22 to 25. I went with 23 this time.
It's been 22 for all the years on Health Matters. And Tony, my brain works that way. Yes, look me up. Check me out. Go back and find all those archives. I'm right. You're wrong. It's been 22 for years.
Vaccination.
For some reason you made it 23.
Vaccination like Mother Nature with a brand new 23-gauge needle. If you want to put it that way. These are the CDC vaccine recommendations for the 2016-2017 influenza season. Number one, remember this if you remember nothing else. The CDC recommends everyone age 6 months or older receive an influenza vaccine.
That includes you, Tony.
Every year. And they said by the end of October, if possible. Now, we've got some information. I don't know, Shelley, what do you do? Do you recommend as soon as possible? How do you couch your vaccine recommendations when you're working with people?
Usually October. I want it to last through the whole season, if possible, without having to revaccinate.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that feel that September is a bit early, especially for senior citizens. Now, a young person, the thing is, these vaccines generate a response in your immune system. They show your immune system what a dead flu virus looks like. Your immune system memorizes the virus structure, and if it sees a live flu virus, it goes to work immediately to kill it. That's the way it works. So it depends on how long your immune system can remember that picture that it got during the vaccination. For young people, during the flu season, not a big problem. For older people, it's harder for older people to see the picture. You know, Rick, we've talked about that. Older people kind of worried about whether or not they need to pee. They don't necessarily look at the picture, whether it's a virus
or... Is that why we stopped on the way over here, Tony?
But at any rate, I tell my older people, I agree with you, October, I like to see everyone get vaccinated before Thanksgiving, because in Eastern Kentucky, a lot of families get together for the holidays and share germs. So I think that's the first important date. There is already sporadic influenza in the state of Kentucky, a dozen or so cases reported. But if I were over age 65, I would hold off until the 1st of October. That's when I would try to get it and certainly have your vaccine by Thanksgiving. Fun fact number two, only injectable vaccines. That's right, Mother Nature with a brand new 23-gauge needle, not a nasal spray. There was an analysis of the nose spray for the past couple of years. It did not seem to be effective. So this year, the CDC says no nasal spray. They are not recommending the nasal spray vaccine. Now, there's been some information come out that maybe it's not as bad as they thought, but again, CDC is not bending on this because the past two flu seasons, the nasal spray did not get the job done. Fun fact number three, they have what they call trivalent and quadrivalent. What this means is the trivalent has three different flu strains, the quadrivalent has four different flu strains. There's really, the CDC does not have any specific recommendations of one or the other. You would think, well, gee, four is better than three. Right? I mean, there's an allergy medicine that says that. You know, five is better than two.
Just means they can reduce their accuracy level.
Well, they throw in another one, but there is no proven beneficial effect. If you are a cautious person, you want to get vaccinated against four different strains of the flu instead of three, that's perfectly fine. I you know what I do, Rick, and this is a little embarrassing, I go and whatever they have, I get. It's not like I say, oh, hold off. Can you show me the brand of this? I'm not sure. I want the premium flu vaccine with the four different strains and homogenized or whatever. I just say, oh yeah, here, roll up my sleeve.
But you get yours with a 22-gauge needle.
I don't question the flu vaccine.
I bet you it's 22.
Do you? I mean, I don't know. It's just whatever they got.
Yeah, just whatever they get. That's...
Yeah. You just go get it. I mean, it's just do that and don't worry so
much.
I'm telling you, you have those two strains available. I don't know why they even report this, because we're going to go get what's in the needle.
And you have been such a prima donna that you don't even go get it. They bring it to you. Am I wrong?
Well, employee health chases you around the building. You cannot take care of patients without a flu vaccine. So you get blacklisted. Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty serious thing, but I got
to
work with them. I don't know what that means. Anyway, fun fact number four, standard dose vaccines using virus grown in eggs will be available. This is what they always do. And this is the frustrating thing. Flu virus is still grown in eggs. One, if you have an egg allergy, That's a bit of a problem. Turns out not as much of a problem as we thought, but still it's a problem. And then secondly, it takes a long time. If we guess wrong, if the type of virus causing the flu changes suddenly, we can't move very fast. And you see that with other vaccines. We're struggling when we see a Zika or an Ebola or other viral illnesses to try to even find the vaccine that can work. We're really slow with this. Fun fact number five, and this is where we will stop, a high-dose vaccine called Fluzone High Dose. Fluzone High Dose. What would you call your high dose? It's a Fluzy High Dose vaccine is what it is. Fluzone High Dose vaccine. This is for people age 65 years and older. You remember I said old people have problems. Their immune system can't remember the virus picture?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we do is we just blow it up into a high-definition picture of the virus. It contains four times the amount of antigen that the regular one does, and your immune system will not forget that. They looked at 30,000 people age 65 or older. They had 24% fewer influenza infections with a high dose. Now, if you're less than 65, the regular works fine. You've got a good immune system. Just take care of yourself. You'll be fine. But once you get old, and over 65 is still old to me, somewhat.
What's it to them?
Well, I'm saying if you're over age 65, you could get that Fluzone High Dose, and you might want to ask for that. I think it's important to get the vaccine. I would rather you get something than nothing but the high dose. I think that's going to be the key thing. That is our sponsor, the Vaccination League, like Mother Nature, with a brand new, newly changed 23-gauge needle, the all-natural way to take care of those nasty virus and bacterial infections. All right, Rick, we got some time left.
Barely, thanks to you.
Well, of course, thanks to me. The show is thanks to me. Don't unload.
It's prima donna.
All right, the question is, do you remember where you were, I don't know, 9/11?
Yes.
These researchers at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center, they say they know why you remember.
Yeah.
They said, well, when you stimulate your locus coeruleus, that's a part of your brain that makes dopamine.
I don't have one of those.
You do. If you do something amazing, startling to your brain, it releases dopamine, and that helps cement those memories in place.
I assure you, I was doing nothing amazing.
Yeah, but the world did something amazing.
I was in
that
the Capitol in Frankfurt, and they locked it down. I remember the guys came out with guns, and I remember that's why I couldn't.
And so you know that. You know what I remember is I remember thinking I should remember what I'm doing because I don't quite remember
at
what I did.
At that moment in time, I remember the space shuttle.
Yeah. So I
knew some crazy thing was going on. I mean,
yeah.
And at the time, when I first got involved, when I first saw it, you know, the towers hadn't come down yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was just tragic, you know, and then it got worse.
Well, apparently they think that the difference of the environment, and they said, well, you can use that. Let's say if you're studying for an exam, if you do something out of the ordinary after you read a passage, you'll remember it better.
What exactly, excluding, because we don't want to promote any kind of bodily harm, excluding that, what on earth could you do?
You'll like this.
Oh, no, I won't.
Yes, you will. They said, what about playing a brand new video game during your break? Or, if you're a company executive, play tennis right after memorizing your big speech.
Really? That's all you got?
Seriously, do you think that's the difference? You put on a new video game and then
I'm thinking
sudden,
walk in traffic or something, but no.
No.
Come on. Play tennis?
I didn't like it.
I mean, if that's the case, I'm going to tell my boss I need a ping pong table so I can be smarter.
Let me tell you what these University of Texas Southwestern, they published this in Nature. This is really a pretty big deal. But it was in mice, and I don't usually put mice studies in here, but I just thought this was really interesting.
You don't think mice are big deals?
No, I try to do research that's done in humans because I'm not sure this is going to really translate, and I think they're stretching a little bit. But they had these mice. The mice were trying to find some food that they had hidden. And they stimulated the locus coeruleus, and the mice found the food better.
We're going to figure out how they stimulated that, because I got to know.
Why not stimulate yourself with a nice drink, or play a new video game, or a round of tennis? We're going to take a break. We'll be back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Basket of Deplorable Show. Our salute to...
Couldn't we call it the Deplorable Basket Show?
Listen, I did not make the quote. I am just reporting the quote. I think it's a horrendous quote from someone who should have known better, but we are not a political show, so we're not going to do that. With us for the second time, also from the University of Kentucky, Shelly Irving, who's the assistant professor at the UK Physician Assistant Studies Program. And also, and Shelly, let's full disclosure, Shelly and I have been making house calls for the St. Clair Palliative Care Group for about a year now and having a lot of fun. Welcome back to the program, Shelly.
Thank you.
Our sponsor for the second time, the Vaccination League, like Mother Nature, with a brand and spanking new shiny 23-gauge needle that she has not had in previous shows.
Well, at least that's probably not going to hurt as much. Right?
That's
smaller.
Right. The vaccination, the all-natural way to take care of those viral and bacterial illnesses without resorting to harsh chemical vitamins or antibiotics.
How do they fit four viruses down a smaller needle?
A quadrivalent vaccine?
Exactly.
You know the size of a virus.
It's your question to
for
answer.
For those who have never
it's
been
your
inside one,
question.
Viruses are very,
I'm
very
throwing
small.
You a softball. Hit it out of the park there.
Yeah, and what they do, the nasal spray, you know, was what we call an attenuated virus. It was a sick virus,
right.
And they would spray it, and it would replicate in your nose a little bit, and then it would just quit. And so you not only, your immune system saw it, but your nasal tissues did. And so theoretically, it was supposed to keep the virus from even establishing a beachhead in your nose.
But?
Well, it just didn't. Statistically, it didn't work. And so they're sorting it out. And until they get it sorted out, they said, no nose spray this year. It doesn't work. Now, the vaccination is not a live virus. There is no live virus in it. It's killed. It is, in the words of the coroner in the Land of Oz, it is not only merely dead, it is most sincerely dead. It is a dead virus. It will not cause an illness. What it will do is...
I'm trying to make sure you don't go start clicking your heels.
No, the only thing I click is the cap on the 23-gauge needle before we do the vaccination. But at any rate, that dead virus shows your immune system what a flu virus would look like. Your immune system prepares for attack, and then it is ready. It is prepared when the real flu virus hits. And we're talking about CDC recommendations. Let's remind you from the first fractional portion, everyone age 6 months or older should receive an influenza vaccine. And they said by the end of October, as we mentioned, my goal is to get all my patients vaccinated before Thanksgiving. Shelly, you said you like October as well. September yeah. seems a little early.
Yeah.
Yeah, injectable vaccines are recommended this year. No particular vaccine recommended over another. You can pick and choose. And also, like I said, I just say whatever you got, give it to me. There is, fun fact number three, a trivalent, three strains of flu, a quadrivalent, four strains of flu, but there is no evidence that one of them is better than the other. This is, to some degree, marketing. You know, it's like little tiny Retsin tablets and little sparkles or whatever that make your teeth whiter or whatever. You know, these are things, but they all seem to protect against the flu. Fun fact number four. The standard dose vaccine use the virus grown in eggs. It takes a while to do that. If you have an egg allergy, that's a bit of a problem. Number five, we talked about last time, Fluzone, the four times as powerful vaccine for people over age 65, seems to do a little bit better. If you're over age 65, you might ask your healthcare provider if you could get that Fluzone injection. Now we're up to six. Flublok is a vaccine that is egg-free. Available, approved for people ages 18 years and older. If you have a serious egg allergy, there is an egg-free vaccine. New this season, first time ever, Fluad, which is an adjuvant seasonal vaccine. That is, it has the flu virus, just like the other vaccines, and it also has an adjuvant, which is supposed to create a stronger immune response. You'll love this adjuvant. You will want to go out and get some right away. It is MF59 adjuvant, oil and water emulsion of squalene oil. That's right. MF59 oil and water squalene oil. Get yours now before supplies are depleted.
Yep.
I don't know what to think of that, but it was a Canadian study. People over age 65, 63% more effective than regular dose vaccine without the squalene oil. I'm going, okay. Fine. I don't know what that does, but it is available this year. If you see it, be aware of it. Fun fact number eight, the quadrivalent, the four-virus injectable vaccine, used virus grown in eggs, available. Again, standard dose vaccine, four of those, and you can go down to 6 months old. And there is an intradermal, not an IM injection, but an under-the-skin injection for people ages 18 through 64. Fun fact number nine, also new this season, a four-virus virus strain called Flucelvax. It is grown in cell cultures and, again, not in eggs. Fun fact number 10, people with egg allergies can receive any licensed recommended influenza vaccine. No longer have to be monitored for 30 minutes, according to the CDC. If you have a severe egg allergy, you should be monitored and you need to be supervised by a healthcare provider. So do not do, and this, you know this, if you have a severe egg allergy, don't do the drive-through stuff. I myself, if I got a flu vaccine, I usually like to be in a place where if something bad happened, I don't want to be in my car driving home. So I like to hang out for a little bit after I get it, make sure I'm okay. And number 11, children younger than age 9, if it is their very first year to get the flu vaccine, need two doses. Not one dose, two doses of vaccine. If you've had previous vaccination, you only need one. But for your child's first year receiving flu vaccine, they will need two doses separated by time. You don't just hit them simultaneously. I believe that's correct. That is our sponsor, the Vaccination League. Reminding you, get your flu shot before Thanksgiving, before mid-November, preferably in October. Flu vaccine, like Mother Nature, with a 23-gauge needle. Okay, last time we were talking about long-lasting memories.
What was that?
I will remind you that last time we were talking about long-lasting memories. And let me just...
Tony, that's what you had in my script.
Let me finish the science of this. These guys at Texas Southwestern, Robert Green and Alex Sonneborn, they have figured out, they had mice, and they figured out if they could stimulate the mice's locus coeruleus region of the brain, which makes dopamine. Dopamine is a reward chemical. If they could do that, the mice could remember where the food was better when they did that. And that's it. I mean, that was an exciting thing. These are the locus coeruleus guys. They've been working on this a long time. This was not something they dreamed up in the garage overnight. They spent years figuring out what this thing does. And they think that it enhances memory. And they gave the example, if you did something unusual and stimulated this reward center, then you might be able to remember things better. Now, we talked about the 9/11. I found out something disturbing, and I'll go ahead. When the space shuttle Challenger exploded, I remember I was at a veterans hospital in Richmond, Virginia, seeing patients, and I would see a patient and go out and just check and see how bad things were.
You were already a doctor then?
I was, in fact, a practicing physician. I was a resident, but still I was a practicing physician when the space shuttle Challenger exploded. Shelley, you want to chime in where you were?
Middle school.
Middle school. Hopefully through puberty, at least. Give me something here.
I was at least in high school gym class, Tony. As the, you know, elder here.
And this, you say, well, why do you bring a mouse study here? Well, first of all, it's fun to make fun of Rick, and Rick gets to make fun of me because I'm old.
Well, you were already a practicing physician, and I was still enjoying
high school. I'm aware. I was a very young practicing physician, though. I'll point out, many of my patients thought I was a mere child because I had a boyish face.
Like Doogie?
He was never Doogie Young.
I was going to say something clever. There's nothing clever there. No, you're absolutely... Nice try, Shelley. Thank you very much.
Doogie would have had a clever
bonus
response.
Points for you. You're moving up the co-host list rapidly, but no, not Doogie. But the point is, from them, is that now that we know that, if you could stimulate this center, you might be able to improve memory. And you know, Rick, I mean, we've talked about these people that are taping wires to their heads and electrically stimulating their brains to try to improve their memory. It is, first of all, remember from the Academy of Neurology, this is really dangerous stuff. We don't understand it well, but we are starting to appreciate the fact that your brain is not simply inert, that there may be some ways we can enhance memory, either using performance-enhancing drugs or electrical currents or other methods of stimulation. So we're working on it, and it looks like one possible target for those stimulations is locus coeruleus, but it's a ways away. Just wanted to bring that point out and also to find out where Rick was when something really bad happened. Next up, this was all in the news, and I thought we ought to comment on it. This was back in September 12th, actually, in the AMA Internal Medicine Journal. The guys in San Francisco, and Stanford Glantz is the big one, he got the cigarette company documents and sort of unearthed the fact that they were blending cigarettes to try to get people addicted to nicotine. So he has now looked at some documents they have in their library regarding a literature review on sugar. This was in the New England Journal of Medicine way back in 1967 by two experts in nutrition, Dr. Mark Hegstead and Robert McGandy, who are at Harvard. They did a literature review and published it in the New England Journal of Medicine. Now, this happens pretty much every week in the New England Journal of Medicine. These guys were experts. They were talking about sugar and cholesterol, and the Sugar Research Foundation paid them back in 1967, $50,000. Oh, I'm sorry. In 2016, it would have been the equivalent of $50,000. And they said, look, you write the review. It doesn't look like anybody at the Sugar Foundation wrote the review, but they did mention a particular interest to us. We want to make sure that the role of sugar in replacing cholesterol would be known. And they then had some internal memos that said, you know, if we could replace the cholesterol, if they recommend against cholesterol and we could replace cholesterol with carbohydrates, that would be very good for business. Those are internal documents. Now, they said, well, you know, here it is, the smoking gun. They influenced this our nutritional advice for decades with this New England Journal review. I think it's overdone. Several other people think it's overdone. The article mentions there's no direct evidence that the sugar industry wrote or changed the manuscript, but they did have an expectation of what would be in the manuscript, and they paid for the manuscript. That was not illegal in 1967. You know, Rick, I mean, honestly, Coca-Cola has been and Pepsi have been doing child nutrition for a long time. Mars has the Mars candy companies had a lot to do with all the things we hear about dark chocolate and the health benefits of that. So this is, in my mind, this is not anything unusual, and it was not either illegal or unethical at the time. We have tightened up our standards a little since then, but I was really fairly unimpressed with this, to be honest. It created, you know, well, here we are, the sugar industry's evil at the core, and they have influenced science. I'm just kind of embarrassed that science wasn't any better at the time.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure this never happened in the tobacco science.
Well, and in that case, you know, there was, as you know, I mean, we are both UK employees. Well, we're all three UK employees, and UK had a tobacco institute whose sole purpose was to try to essentially to fog the information regarding the poor health effects of tobacco. But I've talked a lot about, and we'll talk later in this show, I've talked a lot about the Women's Health Initiative and estrogens. You know, you use the best information you got, and sometimes that information's wrong. And I think we're now coming to the fact that sugar information is wrong. I'll point out, at about the time this came out, also, that was 1967. In the early 70s, there was something called the Seven Countries Study. First published. This was a guy named Ansel Keys at the University of Minnesota. And he looked around the world at seven countries, and he also decided that cholesterol was the main driver, dietary cholesterol was the main driver of heart disease. The problem is he sort of picked his seven countries to support that hypothesis. He did show us what the Mediterranean diet was. He had some information. They followed people for 50 years, so he knows what high blood pressure and smoking did. But some critics say that you could reinterpret some of his data to indicate that carbohydrates actually drove heart disease and not cholesterol. Now, we're coming to a reassessment here. That's the big thing. Certainly cholesterol, your cholesterol level is linked to your risk of heart disease. I think that still holds, and that's pretty solid. Your dietary cholesterol intake is not a major driver of what your cholesterol is. That is really the new information. And when we tried to get rid of cholesterol, we substituted carbohydrates, and that was a big mistake, right? You got that low-fat diet, and we stuck in carbs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that turned out to be a mistake. It looks like that we may have created an epidemic of diabetes by saying that. Now, here's what we know. Saturated fats, especially trans-saturated fats, which have been banned in the U.S., trans-saturated fats are really bad for your heart. Saturated fats are pretty bad for your heart, and we probably ought to have unsaturated fats in our diet. Replace them saturated with unsaturated. What we don't need to do is to get rid of fats from the diet completely. That may increase our obesity levels, may increase our diabetes level. And on the flip side, there's a group of people that feel that the problem all along has not been dietary fats, but dietary sugar. Now, the problem is, Shelley and I go out, and we're advising people in palliative care. These are older people, and what we're trying to do is to get them to eat anything, right?
Yeah.
Don't you just feed them ice cream?
Yes.
What do you say when you got an older person? I've been a big fan of ice cream for older people. It seems like after you forget everything else, you love ice cream. At least that's the way I am personally. What do you tell your patients, the older folks on palliative care?
We tell them to eat ice cream.
You use some Ensure, Carnation Instant Breakfast?
Ensure, Carnation Instant Breakfast, milkshakes with peanut butter in them.
Ooh, never had one of those. I'm not sure how I feel about. Oh, I mean, you know, I've had little bits of peanut butter.
But you know, Tony, you can put peanut butter on anything.
That's true. I could eat peanut butter with a milkshake. I don't know about in a milkshake. The point is, though, most of what we do from a dietary standpoint in palliative care is just to try to get people to eat. If you are a younger person, replace your saturated fat with unsaturated fat.
Tony, that sounds great, and it makes you sound extremely smart. How does one do that?
Eat vegetables.
So
sorry.
No. It cannot be that simple. Right?
No, it pretty much is.
So what do you got to get rid of? Everything but vegetables?
The cheese sauce on the vegetables.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well, that makes them unbearable. How else are you supposed to have cauliflower?
I got to say, it was a major step for me. Two big things I've done. I don't butter my corn anymore, and I quit getting broccoli with cheese on it. Now, you know, we're not so sure about cheese. You know, we talked about that a couple of shows ago. We're not so sure about cheese anymore. But in general, you know, the problem is if diet only makes up a small part of your cholesterol, we're starting to realize, you know, what's more important is to try to maintain a healthy weight and to eat those vegetables. And so I'm
almost...
So
you're saying I shouldn't deep fry those vegetables.
Right. And the other thing is, if cheese would make you eat those vegetables, I'm giving you a little bit of liberty. Cheese them lightly, okay? But if that would help you eat more vegetables, that seems to be the big thing. What we don't do now is try to eliminate fat from the diet because it turns out fat makes you feel full. Fat is important for weight control, and fat is not the bad actor that we thought. And that's why we have progressively allowed. You know, we went against eggs there for a couple of years. We just said, no, you can't even have eggs.
I didn't play that game.
You were always an egg guy.
I love eggs. They're good.
Well, I remember, Shelly, did you ever do egg whites?
No.
such a sensible person. I really don't like egg whites. I mean, just by themselves.
I like, I was going to say,
yeah, that's pretty
mix
bad.
A little yellow in there, and they're fine.
Yeah. Now, and to follow that up then, I know we're running out of time in the second fractional portion, but this is one that came, a study for that came from University College in London, and it was really an interesting idea. I've never seen this. It was a Mendelian randomization study. I don't even know what that is. What they did was they had access to a fairly large number of genetic analysis of European people, as well as their cholesterol level. So they looked at the genes that coded for a high cholesterol and a low cholesterol, and what they found was that people who had naturally lower cholesterol, bad cholesterol, actually had a higher rate of diabetes. Now, we don't know if lowering the cholesterol raises your risk of diabetes. We know that these statin drugs will. They still lower your risk of heart disease, but they may raise your risk of diabetes. So maybe, and I'm going to we'll end this fractional portion with this mystery.
Tidbit.
Yes. Maybe bad cholesterol is not all that bad. Maybe it's bad on the outside, but it has a heart of gold. And it may protect you from diabetes. Certainly, when we start new cholesterol-lowering medicines like the PCSK9 ones, we got to really think about what we're doing. We banish bad cholesterol, we may create as many problems as we solve.
I'm going to exclude myself from your "we" comment.
Okay. Statins are great. There's nothing wrong with statins. But bad cholesterol may not be bad to the bone. We've got to take a break. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. Stay tuned for our third and final fractional portion.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this the Basket of Deplorables show, just because we did, just because
because you wanted to.
I know, because I'm
exerting your executive authority. I get it.
Right.
Flexing your muscles.
Thank you. Third and final fractional portion. Last time for this show, you will hear from Shelly Irving, who is a physician assistant, worked with me for the past year, and also assistant professor at the UK Physician Assistant Studies Program. Hey, Shelly.
Hello.
Our sponsor for the final time, Vaccination League, reminding you, vaccination, the all-natural way to take care of those viral and bacterial illnesses without resorting to using harsh chemical vitamins and antibiotics. Vaccination, like Mother Nature, with a brand new and recently resized 23-gauge needle. The recommendations for influenza this year. Number one, everyone aged 6 months or older receive influenza vaccine. Number two, influenza vaccines, only the injectable ones are available for use. The nose spray is out this year while they are evaluating its effectiveness. There is no preference for one vaccine over another. Get the one that you can get. There are trivalent that have 3 strains of flu, quadrivalent that have 4 strains of flu. That might be an advantage. Drug companies are always looking for advantages. There is no proven advantage of the 4-strain over the 3-strain. The standard vaccines are still grown in eggs. That's an issue if you have egg allergies. The high-dose vaccine called Fluzone High Dose. If you say it right, it sounds vaguely nasty. Fluzone High Dose, 4 times the antigen, recommended for people over age 65 and produces a little bit better response. There is FluBlock. It is egg-free. There is Fluad that has the squalene oil in water, which appears to make it a little bit stronger. That's called an adjuvant vaccine. First year for that one. I don't know anything about it, but a Canadian study said it was pretty good. There is also an injectable virus, quadrivalent virus, is recommended for people ages 18 through 64 that is intradermal, injected in the skin instead of the straight injection into the muscle. Number nine, there is a Flucelvax grown in cell-based rather than eggs if you have a severe egg allergy. If you have a mild egg allergy, you can take any of the vaccines. That's fun fact number 10. Egg allergies can receive any vaccine. If you had a severe allergic reaction, though, certainly you should consider going with the non-egg ones, and you should have your vaccine done in a healthcare setting, not a drive-through. And I don't like the drive-through. I know it's convenient, but if something were to happen, and you never know, the odds are small, but why not just wait around in the waiting room a little bit and make sure you're okay rather than driving off? And number 11, children under age 9, if it is their first year to get the vaccine, 6 months through 8 years old, have not received the vaccine before, will need 2 vaccinations instead of a single one. If they had a flu shot last year, then they can go to 1 vaccine from there on. That is our sponsor, the Vaccination League, like Mother Nature, with a 23.5-gauge needle. Now, let me just start by saying statin drugs for lowering cholesterol have been a remarkable, remarkable advance in medicine. These are some of the best medicines we've got. Yes, they have some side effects, but oh my goodness, they have changed the very nature of heart disease. Bypass grafts that used to close off in less than 10 years have been open twice as long. People's risk of repeat heart attacks has gone down. I love these drugs. I love what they've done for my patients. That being said, we are now reevaluating dietary cholesterol. We want to stay away from saturated fats and certainly transaturated fats, but the transaturated fats are hard to come by in the U.S. We want to move toward unsaturated fats, which are vegetable oils mainly, and so we want to move to eat more vegetables. If you eat good foods, you don't need to worry about how many eggs you eat per week. You don't need to worry about eliminating fat from your diet. That turns out to be a mistake, honestly. It was a mistake, another mistake, yet another mistake. And the other thing that, in my mind, is fascinating is you go back and look at that 7-country study. You look at that influential editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine. We diverted attention from sugar, and sugar may be a bigger problem than we thought. Stay tuned on that. There are some strongly held opinions. This is one person likened this to the abortion. Abortion issue. You know, it's that no one is listening to reason. No one is trying to compromise. But there are some people who hold both sides very strongly. It is the cholesterol that is the primary driver of heart disease. It is sugar that is the primary driver of heart disease. I want you to realize there is dissent among the medical community regarding those facts. And the sugar people right now are having a lot of influence over medical literature, including publishing the fact that the National Sugar Foundation, Sugar Research Foundation, influenced the editorial back in the New England Journal. Other than that, they're fighting out their fight in public, and you don't need to know this except to realize that we're still saying a balanced diet that's got vegetables in it is the best way to counteract a variety of ailments, including heart disease. Rick,
yes.
Put this in for you. You got to go for that corner office, the window office.
Why?
Well, it turns out, and this was from Uppsala University in Uppsala, Sweden. I'm sure you've been there. Sleep medicine. They said, you know, those digital devices have that blue light, and that keeps you up at night.
Okay.
What time do you get to bed?
Between 12:15 and 1 a.m.
Right. You're not a you're not a down at dusk and up at dawn kind of guy.
You're funny.
Okay. Now, part of it is you're a tech guy, and that's just the hours that tech guys do.
Yeah. I mean, I get up at 6:15, 6:30, something like that. So I get a solid 5.5 hours. Solid.
You're not impressing anybody. Shelly?
Yeah.
Bedtime, wake time?
Probably 10:30, and I get up about 5.
You are not a late night computer fan.
No, but I do take my tablet to bed with me and read.
Okay. So. Well, here's what they did. They had people then like you, like Rick, who stand in front of blue light emitting devices at night. Now, the idea is that the blue light devices may suppress melatonin, which promotes sleep. And so what do we do about that? They said, well, if you have a bright light exposure for over 6.5 hours during the day, it's only 14 people. It's a small study. They measured their melatonin concentrations. They recorded their sleep, and they found even if they crossed over, you read the book, you read the e-book, then you read the e-book and you read the book, cross back and forth, they could not detect any difference in sleep parameters. Now, we know that those electronic devices seem to disrupt sleep. They didn't test that. They assumed that, and then by giving everybody 6.5 hours of bright light during the day, They saw the melatonin level stay normal no matter whether you're reading a paper book or an ebook. So what you got to do then, you got to get an office with Windows. If you spend all day in the dungeon, you come home, you flip on the computer, and you're parsing through sites until midnight, and then you go down for, I don't know, what would you say, Rick, 5 hours, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
Then what you need to do is make sure you get plenty of daylight during the day so that you'll have proper sleep.
So would you write this in a form of a letter so that I can get that corner office? Because right now, I don't have a window.
Oh,
at all.
Gosh.
I'm in the center of the building.
I mean, aside from the weather, just knowing what you're going to face when you go outside, I think that a center office, a non-window office, is detrimental to your health.
No, that's not really true. I don't think so. I think, you know, if you're trying to live by the 10,000 step rule, you're not in your office. You're wandering around. You're going places. You're going by windows. You're going by the entrance. That, you know, I can't get 10,000 steps sitting at my desk.
But you're a tech person. I mean, my impression of you is you sit there
actually,
for
Tony,
hours.
See, you have some kind of, when we first started doing this, and you invited me to the show, I was a tech person. Now I'm one of those managers, and I'm putting air quotes around that, right? So I'm a manager, so I only think I know tech.
You're actually a bigwig.
Well, no, I'm not.
He's
I'm
a
big.
Just,
I
wait a minute, Shelly. Look at him. Do you think he is a bigwig?
I am physically big.
Yeah, he's a bigwig. See, yeah.
But
Shelly's
I'm not
on
a
my
wig.
Side on this. You see this? She is right now. She is sliding into that co-host slot.
Would you like me to turn my big against you? Because right now, like I said, not as big as I once was.
I'm in the middle here. I'm going to have to side with him.
See, you bring smart people in. So, no, Tony, but I do think, no, I get what you're saying.
Everybody's going to change microphones.
No. Yeah. No, the thing is really, I mean, you can talk about that, but even tech, I mean, everybody, you can't live your life sitting at your desk. And as a manager, as a worker, whoever it is, you got to figure that out. If you're going to live an active, healthy life, you've got to figure out how to get out of that seat and walk around. You know, one thing we've started doing, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it happens all the time, but we've had a few times where we've just had to walk around the block and have a meeting. Have one person, two people, you walk together, you talk, and you have your meeting actually on the sidewalk as opposed to in a meeting room. So there's things that you have to do to get out of that. Even the corner office, you have to get up and move around. So I think, you know, while I appreciate the fact that sunlight apparently does wonders for you, you really got to figure out how to get out of the office, not get light into the office.
This study was not a strong study. Some daylight, not a bad idea, but probably more important, and you have identified that, is getting out, moving around, trying to do more.
So Tony, I see this trend, or you hear people make these requests that they want their stand-up desk. Right? You know, even the stand-up desk might be good for the back. It might be good for something else. But ultimately, you still got to get away from the desk. I mean, the key is you got to figure out how to get away from the desk.
That's a good point. I really think if you invest that much money in a desk, you're going to wind up staying at the desk. We've had a couple of employees that have gotten stand-up desks, and they wound up
not
sitting
using
down.
The desk.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if you have, I've seen them on the hydraulic lifts so that you can stand up, sit down, and you spend some time standing and some time sitting. I honestly think your best bet would probably be to have a sitting desk and then to
get
move.
Out.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
To leave the desk. And I would rather do that than invest in desk technology.
But, maybe. See, now, if you're telling me that sunlight, now here, let's take this a different direction. So you're telling me that this study suggests that if we put sunlight in the room, sunlight being, was it UVA and UVB rays, right?
Right.
If we take that same light that we can generate out of a tanning bed bulb, and we put tanning beds in our offices, in the middle offices, we'll give them the same effect health-wise as the people in the corner offices.
Okay.
Didn't know I was going to go there, did you?
No, tanning beds or bright lights. I mean,
so we're going to grow healthy people.
Light boxes. Maybe that's what you need, an interior office with a light box. Or maybe you just need not to look at the screen so much. Maybe you should just read a
Tony,
book.
That's coming from a doctor, not a tech guy.
Okay.
I mean, of course, granted, you got to look at screens an awful lot these days, too, you know.
I have now 3 computers in my office.
Yeah. And so telling a tech guy not to look at screens, we just have to sit and laugh. I mean, that's comical to us.
Well, don't sit and laugh. Why not walk around the block and laugh?
Good point. Touche. You get me there. Okay, you smarty pants.
Okay. So,
but I was still in high school when you were practicing medicine.
When I saw, when I was watching the
and
Space
And while that may have been good
up,
for you when you were 20 or 40 or 30,
yeah.
When I'm 60, it's not going to be as good for you.
It is vital right now that you get out and move around. And I think getting a chance to get some sunlight, it may mitigate some of the problems you face with these devices. Although, again, we say this is not the best study we've ever seen that has that. Can I put in?
You can have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. This came from the Annals of Oncology, September 6th. And for me, it was a very interesting study. It was about the oral contraceptives, especially in the United States, lowering the risk of ovarian cancer. Again, the Annals of Oncology, they're watching from 1970 to 2012 rates of ovarian cancer, 28 countries in the European Union, 4 other European countries, 11 countries in the Americas, 6 other countries worldwide. At all ages, mortality rates decreased between 2002 and 2012. Every European country except Bulgaria, I don't know why Bulgaria, but everyone except Bulgaria, showed a downward trend. Death rates for ovarian cancer fell 28% in Estonia, Austria 18%, Denmark and Sweden 24%, United Kingdom 22%, United States ovarian cancer dropped 16%. And in 2012, mortality from ovarian cancer was less than 5% in both the U.S. and Canada. This is the fifth most common cause of cancer death among women. It has no screening test. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the idea using birth control pills seemed to lower rates of ovarian cancer, we suspected it. But this study confirms what we had suspected. The other thing, you know, Shelley, I've talked a lot on this show about postmenopausal hormone therapy, big mistake, and so forth. But just like bad cholesterol, postmenopausal hormone therapy may have had an influence on ovarian cancer rates as well. So, there's, you know, again, about the time you think something's bad, it's good. About the time you think you know what's good, it's bad.
Bad again.
Pretty much. With that being said, final thing.
Except for that last thing.
Yeah, I know. This was from the FDA, September 7th. Despite extensive research and published studies, there are currently no screening tests for ovarian cancer. Let me say again, no screening tests for ovarian cancer. Why is that important? Because you will see tests marketed for ovarian cancer. Yes, using an ultrasound machine, they can take a picture of your ovaries. No, that does not effectively screen for ovarian cancer. There is no proof that it will save your life, that it will prevent you from having metastatic cancer. None of those things. And we've tried. The researchers at UK have been doing this for a long time to try to figure this out, but so far have not seen any combination of blood tests or x-ray tests, including ultrasound, that will do this. This is what the FDA says. It says for women, including those that even those at increased risk of developing ovarian cancer. There is no safe and effective screening test. Don't rely on screening test results to make health or treatment decisions. Talk to your doctors about ways to reduce your risk, especially if you have a family history of ovarian cancer or have the BRCA1 or BRCA2 genetic mutations. But do not fall prey to false advertising that says they will be able to screen for ovarian cancer. Rick, can you screen us off the air in time for us to get some daylight?
Yes, sir, I think I can. Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember these words we borrowed from the Sugar Association.
We acknowledge that Health Matters should have exercised greater transparency in all of its research activities. However, when the studies in question were published, funding disclosures and transparency standards were not the norm they are today.
Beyond this, it is challenging for us to comment on events that allegedly occurred 60 years ago and on documents we've never even seen.
Generally speaking, it is not only unfortunate, but a disservice that radio show research is branded as tainted. What is often missing from the dialogue is that radio show research has been informative in addressing key issues.
We question the author's continued attempts to reframe historical occurrences to conveniently align with the current trending anti-health matters narrative, particularly when the last several decades of research have concluded that our show does not have a unique role in heart disease.
Most concerning is the growing use of headline-baiting articles.
Headline-baiting articles. I'm sorry.
Thank you. To trump quality scientific research. We're disappointed to see a journal of JAMA's stature being drawn into this trend.
Health Matters is always seeking to further understanding of the role in radio shows in health, but we rely on quality science and facts to drive our assertions. Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news on the amazing, incredible health benefits of eating sugar on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.